The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment. If you're concerned about your health in any way, we encourage you to consult your GP.
People don't like talking about it, but incontinence can affect anyone. You may have a friend or relative who lives with it every day, or maybe you're worried about your own incontinence. Incontinence Talks is here to make us all feel more confident about continence, hosted by former Olympian rower and Coloplast ambassador Pete Reed. In this episode, Pete chats to continence care education manager at Coloplast, Emma Russell, about his own continence journey, and together they shine a light on an issue facing many people in the UK, continence.
Hello everyone and welcome to Incontinence Talks, the podcast that's here to make us all feel more confident about continence. I'm Pete Reed and in this episode I'll be setting the scene for what you can expect to hear through the series, as well as sharing my personal journey. To help me with this, and I'll need a lot of help, I'll be joined by Emma Russell here, who's a continence care professional education manager from Coloplast. And the first question I've got for you is, why has Coloplast decided to make this podcast at all?
Hi, thank you for having me. It's great to be here. I think it's really important for us to talk about continence because there is a loo taboo. So I think being able to have that discussion with people and have it openly, I think really helps.
A loo taboo. I like it. I've never heard that before, but we're talking about, so sorry if this is shocking for anybody, but you'll get used to it as we talk about more and more. We're talking about wee and poo and bladder and bowel functions. And I'm really happy to be talking through my experiences with you, and I'm grateful for you giving me a steer. I also wanted to ask you, before we get started, what does Continence Care Professional Education Manager to Coloplast mean? What's your day-to-day job?
So I'm a registered nurse. I specialised in urology for 17 years, and I joined Coloplast in March. And my job role as Coloplast Professional Education Manager is about educating healthcare professionals. I might say HCPs later on in the podcast.
And what is a healthcare professional? For anyone that just doesn't know and hasn't used the NHS for decades.
Healthcare professionals, nurses, physios, doctors, occupational therapists, community nurses, midwives.
So thank you, because it was before your time with Coloplast when I got injured, but I had some really important and intimate and sensitive and amazing experiences with urology nurses in particular, talking me through catheterization. And we'll come on to that this episode and through the series. Before we do, you mentioned the word urology.
Yes.
So that's your bread and butter, but yes, Maybe not for all of the listeners. What's urology?
So urology is the easiest way to say is for kidneys downwards. So your kidneys, ureters, the bladder, obviously males, your genitalia, your prostates, women, obviously just the bladder, urethra. So anything that could go wrong with that sort of system, the urinary system.
I know the anatomy well now because I didn't know it before 5 years ago, but you can become something of an expert in your injury and your change of circumstances. And tippy top of the list of areas that affect my life is urology, bladder function, and we'll get to bowel function as well. But the kidneys filter the blood and get rid of waste products. The ureter that you mentioned is the pipe that goes from kidney to bladder.
Yes.
The bladder is the balloon that's a very sensitive organ that inflates during the day and deflates when you pee. And it's a complex neurological system, I know. At the bottom of that balloon, so the neck of the balloon, there's a piece of your anatomy called the bladder sphincter, which is the door to the urethra. Was the next thing you mentioned? That's the pipe that goes
your
pee pipe, and then you get to females, you get to the exit hole, and for men, you get to the exit hole as well, the pee hole. And this is all really important because for normal functioning people, you just don't think about this almost ever. Just the most natural process of filling and voiding, so peeing, the medical word voiding. And I know so much about the system now because it changed immediately for me. And so I guess as we're getting started off, for the listeners out there, they're not in your world, Emma, so this is not their bread and butter. Typically, around the world, we don't talk about wee and poo because it's just seen as a private thing, even though we all do it. It's behind closed doors. It's not brought up at the dinner table or in polite conversation. I think the reason for that is just because people aren't expecting it. So the more people talk about it, the more it will be normalized. It's normal, more normal in some circles or families than others, I suppose. What's your experience on the taboos of wee and poo in your subject area?
So being a nurse, well, I'm not worried and scared to talk about it.
Yeah, there you go.
Sometimes to the detriment of my family, they don't like me talking about it. They tell me off sometimes. But yeah, people don't like talking about it. It's not glamorous. It's not something you're going to share with people, which is why I sort of say it's like a loo taboo. And a lot of people go a long time without seeking help. They think it's themselves, you know, they think maybe they've had a baby, that's why they're leaking. Or they're getting old and that's why they can't, you know, they can't hold their wee as much. And so they don't seek help, which is really, really, you know, heart-wrenching sometimes because people can be suffering for so long without seeking help.
What other common reasons are there for people to be concerned about their urology and whether they're peeing that people will have heard about, listeners?
So we'll start with men. If they're getting up at night quite a lot. That's what we call nocturia. That can sometimes be caused by an enlarged prostate. And that can sometimes cause other symptoms like frequency, where you have to go a lot.
Yep.
Or maybe you leak when you're trying to get to the toilet. That's called urgency incontinence. You can also get a weak detrusor. So that can be over time.
Big word there.
Weak detrusor. That's the bladder muscle.
Okay.
If that becomes weak and can't actually hold the urine, people might leak that way.
Yes.
When women, when they carry babies, there will be a certain amount of pressure put on the pelvic floor. So that can sometimes cause what we call stress incontinence. But it's basically when they cough and sneeze, they might leak at the same time, or when they're jumping on trampolines. A lot of women say, oh, I can't jump on a trampoline anymore.
Yeah, or laughing, sneezing, coughing.
Yeah.
And then with a cancer diagnosis and on operation or MS, are there other conditions that people will have heard of that they just wouldn't have thought would relate to bladders and bowels?
Yeah, MS is a big one.
Okay.
Quadriquina.
Yep. Quadriquina, I know what it is, but for anyone that hasn't heard of quadriquina.
So that's a condition that affects the spine, probably the easiest way to, to describe it. There are also the MS, they have issues with their bladder and their bowel, but they may not know that they're an issue with their MS because when they first get diagnosed, they might not be aware that that's going to be an issue.
The reason why I'm asking you those questions is because this isn't just a podcast for people who are disabled or old. There'll be thousands. There are thousands of people in the UK alone dealing with urological problems and continence problems and incontinence. So continence, the subject of weeing and pooing, incontinence when that doesn't work well or doesn't function normally. So there are either, it could be retention or it could be voiding, so spills. And that's why we're talking about this really vital subject today, just shining a light. My feeling is the listeners will fall into three camps, but they'll either be fully healthy and interested, so leaning into something that's a bit new, having a light shone in somewhere that I haven't seen online anywhere. No one's talking about catheterization and urology. You see a lot on stoma bags at the moment, so we can talk about that, but for whatever reason, you see stomas a lot more than catheters. So there'll be a healthy camp who are interested and curious for all the right reasons. There will be listeners who have incontinence problems and they'll fall into a camp. They'll be curious. Maybe they'll be excited for the first time that they're seen or validated. That's my hope, that we can discuss the things in this episode and during the series that they either don't feel like they can say because of the loo taboos, they feel like they can't say it, or maybe they don't have the platform that Coloplast has given us with this podcast. But there's also another group where perhaps they're a little bit worried that there's something not quite right with their urology, with their bladders and bowels, with their continence, but they think it might be normal. They might be too ashamed to go to their doctors. They might think nothing can be done. They might think they're just getting old. They might be a bit scared. So those are the listeners we're reaching out to.
So Pete, I know you're a nice guy, but come on, let us know all about you. Come on, tell us a bit about your history.
I think lots of people have heard my story from joining the Royal Navy at 18 and then found rowing and then I got 3 Olympic gold medals over a 12-year period and then rejoined the Royal Navy. But then very sadly, soon after, I had a life-changing injury which affected my spinal cord. And the latest chapter, I mean, chapter 2 of my life is life in a wheelchair with paralysis and coping with all things continence, which we're going to be talking about now, as well as many other challenges. But now my life is with my wife, Jeannie, my newborn son, Freddie, who's just over a year old now. I'm an ambassador for Coloplast and still an honorary captain in the Royal Navy. So there are many challenges, but there are many wonderful moments in my life. I would love to walk again. There are lots of things that I miss. I miss standing up hugs with my wife. And as bad as that is, and it is really bad, it doesn't make the top 5 of things I'd like to have back. And tippy top of that list is having my bladder and bowel function back. When I was first injured, you hand your body over to the medics. I mean, you're in hospital, you're in primary care, and the first thing they do is you're stripped down, your clothes are taken off. They explain that it's not just your legs that are paralyzed. This is my first bit of learning, that it's your bladder's also paralyzed. So you go through this medical procedure, a surgical cleaning of your undercarriage, and a nurse catheterized me for the first time with an indwelling catheter. It was a yellow rubber hose that was rather larger than you might like. And I was pleased that I didn't have any sensation. So I couldn't feel this thing. This catheter, long rubber tube, was pushed up inside my pee hole, up the John Thomas, into the bladder. And all of a sudden, I could see a bag next to me in the hospital bed getting filled up. And then by the end of that day, they're also explaining that your bowels are paralyzed. And I'll butcher these terms, so I'll try and get some help from you. A term called peristalsis, which is the...
peristalsis, yeah.
Thanks, I told you I'd butcher them. The munching of your waste product down through your small intestine, large intestine, around your colon, out through your rectum, and you know when you need to go for a poo, and then it's easy to do it. Now, that system's paralyzed as well. That is an autonomic nervous system process as opposed to central nervous system. So it still works with me, except I have flaccid muscles and a flaccid core. I don't get the sensation that I need to go and sit on the loo. And the nurses explained this to me. And by the end of my first day in hospital, I was rolled onto my side in the hospital bed in the bay with 7 other people. Blue curtains were drawn around the bed. And the nurses are so professional. You'd be so proud. They're just brilliant. This is their day to day. But it wasn't my day to day.
No.
This was running over hills with soldiers and Marines the day before and fit as a flea. And then suddenly I'm gripping the bed frame as the nurse explains the process, puts on a rubber glove, and it's a PR check. So a gloved finger in your back passage, which then moves around, stimulates that peristalsis. And then the smell of rubber gloves turns to the smell of a sewage treatment plant in your own hospital bed. And I'm just thinking, what on earth has happened to my life? It was the first day and the first door to, okay, the big changes here. It's not just I can't swing my legs out and stand up and go about my daily routines, because daily routines from that point on included how am I going to have a wee and how am I going to have a poo? And at that point, I wasn't independent at all. It was all on healthcare nurses caring for me like we care for baby Fred in every way.
A lot to deal with then.
Yeah, a lot to deal with. A crazy start. And you get a lot of information at that time. For me, it was a spinal cord injury, but this isn't a podcast about spinal cord injury. But there will be lots of people, for the reasons that we've discussed already, for various reasons, going through a change of circumstances that affects the things, bladders and bowels, which is so taboo that people don't talk about it, so they get scared.
How did you feel at the start of your intermittent self-catheterization journey?
There's a learning process where from very early on I had a lot of resolve and thinking, right, how am I going to reclaim my identity from the medics? So I was told at the time, in medicine, bad things happen very, very quickly and good things take a long time. They take hard work and time and dedication and diligence. So I made it my aim to learn as much as I could, knowing I wouldn't be in hospital forever. I mean, the aim is to go home. The aim is to be as independent as possible, to have purpose and fulfillment. And over the course of the next few weeks and months, the aim was to learn from the nurses to remove the indwelling catheter, the big yellow pipe that was causing problems. I learned to self-catheterize. So it's called intermittent self-catheterization, ISC. We'll talk about that through the series. But instead of having a pipe that just sits in the pee hole, up the urethra into the bladder, which is just constantly draining out, I went through a process of training my bladder to hold urine again, which you add a valve at some point called a flip flow, a valve in the pipe that you can turn off so your bladder fills and the bladder starts doing its job again. And it's like you're constantly going through this upgrade process over time, depending on how your body's responding. And you'll be pleased to hear this as well. The urology nurses in Derriford Hospital were amazing. I remember the coaching and advice I got about ISC, about catheterizing myself. I remember the day, and it is taboo. You've got a complete stranger that has to form a relationship with you quickly because they're showing you with a model what ISC is all about. So using a new product to push inside yourself to empty your bladder 5 or 6 times a day in that region. I learned as well that I couldn't feel when I needed to go to have a wee. I don't have that feedback to my brain anymore because the spinal cord is closed where it was damaged, so I don't get that feedback. So I'm peeing every day on the clock. But learning to ISC, learning the right techniques, learning about the products available, knowing that it's a medical procedure every time. Hygiene is paramount because things aren't designed to go up that hole. They're designed to come out. So you don't want to be pushing dirt or bacteria in. And actually, if you learn this properly, if you really pay attention, if you're as diligent as you can be, it's not a silver bullet because things can go wrong, but it's a really clean and healthy process. And then that's the start of my wee journey, I suppose. And now it's just completely normal. I pee 5 times a day through a catheter. It feels normal, even though it affects every part of my day because I need to think hard about where I can use the loo. The other part is the poo journey. I think my body has improved a little bit neurologically since 2019, but I still need to go through that process myself every day. There's something called a bowel routine. Everyone has a bowel routine. Your body behaves a certain way. You know, everyone knows when they need to go, and sometimes people are clockwork. But it's really important for me and lots of others, if they've got a paralyzed bowel, to have a routine which really makes you think about where you stay overnight. I use a product called Peristeen that Coloplast produce, which is effectively it's plumbing. It's an irrigation system which is, it's clean and hygienic, but in order to stimulate my bowel, I put a catheter inside my back passage in the morning. I put water, so water gets pumped up there with everyone can search for Peristeen if they like, or go onto the Coloplast website and look at Peristeen. So I'm sure Coloplast have videos of how it works. So if you're interested, I won't try and explain something that's very visual, but that's my process every day. And even that's hygienic because it means that during the day, I'm clean and empty. I haven't had any spills, actually back passage spills, throughout my whole time in a wheelchair because I've been clean, which is really reassuring. But I know it's only a matter of time before I have some problems just down to luck or judgment or not being able to find a toilet where I can do that process.
What do you want the listeners to get out from you sharing your experience?
I don't think I can overshare on this podcast. I want listeners to know that I feel very empowered to talk about this stuff, and I've shared some of my experiences. There are other options as well for other people. Maybe we can go on to talk about options of stoma bags, how they work in this episode, but I know we will later on as well in the series. But I guess the reassuring message is, and I've often thought this, 2025 is a really, really good time to need to use these products. You know, we all have slips and falls and life-changing experiences. There'll be up to 10 people today having a spinal cord injury in the UK alone that will be learning about these processes and going through their own changes. There'll be people in hospital that have had diagnoses or operations that mean they need to learn about this stuff as well. And the reassuring message is there are products, procedures and methods to
and
make
help.
And help. Yeah, to make this part of life as easy and clean and normal as possible. And the reason why I'm an ambassador for Coloplast is because you guys are amazing at this. Like, you really care. I really feel like there's a strong trajectory of technological advancements from people that really care about making this easier for people with intimate healthcare needs.
Thank you so much for sharing. And I think it's really good to for people to hear that, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel when there is incontinence. You touched on your ISC journey, and that's quite close to my heart. I do a lot of the ISC days for healthcare professionals, nurses. How were you introduced to intermittent self-catheterization? You touched on that, you know, they took the urethral one out after they trained the bladder with the valve, but how did you come to terms? You know, how did you start being able to do it? What was the initial sort of regime like?
So the initial conversations really early on in hospital, you don't have to have a bag, a pipe coming out of you, and a bag on the side of your wheelchair. In my case, and I know that's not the same for everybody, but I remember the first time I heard intermittent self-catheterization and being really excited about it as well, because it was exciting because it's part of me reclaiming my body. It's taking a medical device that was permanent for the first, I don't know, couple of weeks maybe. It's removing something that was put in immediately as my life changed. So I was all ears. It was just listening to somebody who was telling me that I could reclaim some of my identity and independence as well. Because although you have that tricky conversation with a stranger, I mean, the professional and brilliant, but stranger, about pushing something up inside your penis.
Yeah.
And showing you how that's done. They showed me on a model and then we went through the process. And that's not a normal process. But bit by bit and day by day, that became routine to the point where now I don't think about it so much.
And I think that's really important, you know, when you are having to do ISC, or when your that advice is put to you, that actually, how am I going to cope with this? How is it going to fit into my life? The psychological side of intermittent self-catheterization can take on a world of different sort of meanings to lots of people. You know, women who don't go down there, or have never looked down there before and don't know they've got two holes.
Yeah.
Or the men that think, oh, you want me to put what where? And
yeah,
that sort of that psychological impact that has, but actually how it can improve their quality of life is immense.
It was a game changer for me. I think for lots of other people and I would encourage people, I think we all would, to seek the medical advice from the GPs and go through the process and speak to urology consultants if they need to. We're just sharing our experiences, and I'm sharing my personal experience at the moment. We should, on that note, speak about ISC. So what the actual process is, because effectively you go from a big rubber yellow indwelling catheter with a bag on the side of the bed that I've got a lovely photo actually that I think Jeannie won't mind me sharing of Jeannie emptying my catheter bag, which is very intimate and caring and a sort of a lovely moment. But I don't want that forever, and she doesn't want that forever. So the transition to ISC, there are lots of products available from lots of different manufacturers. There have been huge advancements over decades since they were introduced, because these conditions were happening to people throughout time. Historically, 1,000 years ago, people would have just died, whether it was something horrible happening in the renal system or infection, but much more recently in the last few decades, catheters were invented, but they weren't single use. They were put in and remove and wash. And later on in this series, we'll talk about innovations. So we'll talk about the history of the catheter there. But the modern intermittent catheter is the typically one use packets that arrive that are hygienic, that are sterile, that are covered and sheathed, that some of them have a bag on so that you can see the quantity that you're peeing, the color, which is really important for some people. Some are just a tube that's hygienic that empties out into a loo. There are female and male versions because females have a much shorter urethra pee pipe than the men, typically 3 to 4 centimeters for women, because they don't have to twist and turn around prostates. So that just goes straight to the bladder. And for men, typically between 20 and 23 centimeters for the urethra length. So there's a longer pipe that twists and turns. You need to position yourself well. And the process is, for me, I wheel up to a loo in an accessible toilet. I need room to navigate. Ideally, it needs to be clean. So there's a, you need to be able to put your catheter on a shelf that's somewhere clean. Some of the packets have sticky bits on so they can go on a wall to make these things easier. They open easily for people with who have dexterity problems. You need to be wash your hands before the process, make sure the area is clean, open the packet carefully, not drop it, of course, but hold a pipe, and I'll explain what I use at the moment, but then hold the tip and the end of the urethra open so you're not getting outside to the inside, and then the pipe pushes up through your urethra, and this is normal to me, I recognize that it's not to all the listeners, until you feel it go through the and you can, I can't feel the process internally, but I can feel on the pipe when it goes through the sphincter, and then urine will start coming out and into the loo. So that's my process, and I will move the catheter a little bit so that there's this free flow of urine coming out until it stops. Recently, and this is really exciting for me, it's been one flow and one stop. Crucially, the bladder is fully empty, which wasn't always the case, but that's really important for people who catheterize to make sure you get all of the urine out. And then you remove the catheter, nice and hygienic, wrap it up. There's often a waste bin in loos, wash your hands, tidy up and go about your day. And it takes a little bit longer than going for a pee. It doesn't feel as refreshing, but that's normal routine and normal life. And this is really important. With modern products, the more refreshing it feels, the more confident you can be that you've fully voided, fully emptied your bladder. I think it is important if it takes less time, that's really important as well, because no one likes to be last in the loo with people waiting for them outside. There's a sense of pride if you catheterize of doing the process efficiently and then getting out first. That's really nice. So that's my weeing process, 4, 5, 6 times a day, depending on how much fluid you intake. Not normal, but normal for me.
On our next episode, Pete and Emma talk about the challenges faced by people living with intermittent self-catheterisation. There are lots of amazing charities that can provide focused support depending on your particular needs, as well as lots of information at collarplus.co.uk. Thank you for listening to Incontinence Talks, and remember to consult your GP if you have any worries about your own continence.